Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
So our speaker tonight is also our Kokyo from tonight, Vanessa. In her late teens, Vanessa left the Channel Island of Jersey when she was born, and her life has been an adventure ever since. She studied and earned degrees in the fine arts, but then turned her attention to writing and world travel. She worked as a reporter in the Mideast and also in Mexico. And then she took a long car trip through India, which she chronicled. She's the author of two books. She's an ordained Zen priest. She's been an active member of Canando for, about 5-6 years, Vanessa? She served as a librarian and a board member. And she continues to write our weekly newsletter. She's currently studying to become a hospital chaplain. And with all of that, she still has time for her husband and her daughter and publishing her online magazine, The Dewdrop. So we welcome Vanessa.
So today is the third day of Hanukkah. So I wanted to just start by wishing anybody who's coming from a Jewish culture, a Jewish background, a very happy holiday, happy Hanukkah. And I was speaking with a very dear friend of mine recently, who's a Jewish cantor. And he was telling me about one of his favorite notions from within his tradition. And it's something that I'd never heard of. Perhaps some of you here have already, but it's a notion called tzimtzum. And tzimtzum refers to the act of creation, the act of the creation of the universe in some ways. The idea that in the beginning, there was God, or there was a divinity, there was some sort of infinite light that performed a contraction of its infinite light in order to create space, a kind of a conceptual space within which finite and independent realms could exist within this space. So it was kind of a vacant space in which creative new light could beam. And so the reference to this contraction and this event that created space in which life could then exist is called tzimtzum. And so I was quite delighted by hearing this notion. I thought it was a very beautiful image and a very beautiful idea. So making space is something that features quite prominently for me in my practice. So I wanted to offer some thoughts about that and some images with you this evening, and then to invite some thoughts and images from yourselves in return, what comes up for you and what kinds of responses according to some of these ideas. What does it mean to make space? We hear that a lot, making space, holding space for certain things, for people. For me, on a practical level, it means something like carving out time in an extremely busy life, facilitating silence, somehow bringing attention to our presence, or having a quality of presence that's expansive, expanding the field of our presence, allowing things to naturally unfold. So I think that Zen practice, Zazen, is a kind of space making. In practicing mindfulness and attention in the present moment, we can kind of expand. We have this, you can have this experience of almost expanding the present moment, and letting in air, opening windows and doors. My teacher back in Europe, when I would sit with him, he was always very emphatic about a teaching in particular that he used to talk about during Zazen. And that was, he would say to us, look at the space, you know, feel the space in between breaths. You know, what is that space in between breaths? And when we're meditating, we can focus in on our breath, on in-breath and out-breath. And then I think for me, something that's always sort of pulled me in is just that little moment in between, at the end of the in-breath, at the end of the out-breath. And then the space between thoughts, you know, moving into the mind. The space in between thoughts. What's there when a thought is not arising? What is that background? How can we connect to it? How can we relate to it? How can we observe it? I was just recently reading a little piece by the teacher from the Thai forest tradition, Ajahn Sumedho. And he said the following: most of our suffering comes from habitual thinking. If we try to stop it out of aversion to thinking, we can't. We just go on and on and on. So the important thing is not to get rid of thought, but to understand it. And we do this by concentrating on the space in the mind rather than the thought. So Ajahn Sumedho has a meditation, a very, very simple meditation that he suggests to practice this exercise, where you might take a very simple sort of existential phrase like I am, or I am being, or I am a human being, but I am is simple enough. And then to hold that phrase in your mind. And then look for the space before it, and look for the space after it, and look for the space in between the words. So it's a very, very simple meditation. It's a meditation that works with thought and explores the ground of thought and what's there before the thought comes up. Because our brains have a tendency to focus on what's in the foreground, on objects. But in this practice, in our practice, in our Zazen practice, we perform a kind of a panning out, you know, a backwards step, and a panning out that takes in the whole picture, where we start a different kind of identification So not with the thoughts themselves, which are like clouds, just clouds moving through the picture, but with the background, with the sky that is vast and open and endless. I'm sharing a picture with you now. So I want to share with you how I naturally make space for myself. This is at least a once a week practice that I try to gift to myself, which is to go down to shoreline and to walk down by the bay, where it's empty, where it's mostly abandoned by a lot of people, where there's some really murky looking streams that lead into a even murkier looking bay, where there's big sort of robotic pylons that straddle the landscape, holding these cables that just seem to go on into the infinite distance. And there are beautiful birds that live there, and ducks and all sorts of other wildlife. And fennel, very strongly scented fennel that grows by the shoreline there. And I find this all very beautiful. For me, this facilitates an opening for me to be in this space. I think California is replete with absolutely gorgeous spaces of redwood forests and, I don't know, Yosemite National Park and canyons and all sorts of things. And yet I just love finding myself down by shoreline. It's completely bereft of trees and mountains and anything like that. There's a certain silence, something I really appreciate about unused, forgotten spaces, which I think this is in many ways. And this was the most recent picture I took there, which was about 2 days ago when we had a very, very foggy morning. I just got muted there. Can you hear me? Yeah. It was a very foggy morning and I couldn't see very far into the distance. I couldn't see even as far as the water. And I thought this was wonderfully evocative. So life can be busy. My life is busy. It can feel chaotic sometimes. And in order to navigate that, I feel I literally have to carve space. Like I have to insist on having a walk down by shoreline. I come to Canandaigua. I sit zazen. It's a psychological act. It's a physical act, and it's a relational act. I think that we make space in relationships too. It's a very active practice and very important. I try and keep my house clean and tidy. I make my bed in the morning. I put my shoes parallel to each other when I take them off. That makes space for me. I make sure I can sit down in silence with a cup of tea. Or if I'm talking with somebody, I try to let the conversation, if I possibly can, just go on a little bit longer. Just allow for more pauses, more spaces for expression. And I somehow, for me, at least all of these activities, all of these small gestures have the effect of just widening things out a little, of just putting a little air and light between events, between things and people. So why is that important? I ask myself. Why is it important to make space? What is space for? There's a quote by Keizan, Master Keizan, from his beautiful text, the Zazen Yojinki, in which he says, "Arising from stillness, carry out activities without hesitation. This moment is the koan. When practice and realization are without complexity, then the koan is this present moment." Arising from stillness, carry out activities without hesitation. And maybe that's something that you can relate to, arising from stillness. We all have the privilege of having that experience through our practice, where when I was at the temple in France, they would say to us, as soon as you hear the meditation bell, get up. Oh, you know, just get up and move into the next thing. And sometimes we'd sort of be like, oh, a little bit dozy, you know, blood sugar low, trying to just get up and get back into it. But there's something about that moment, isn't there? There's something about the simplicity and the clarity of that moment of spaciousness, which for me is, it's the ground of creativity. It's the ground of freedom. I think where there's clarity, there's freedom, and there's connection. It's a mysterious moment. And so I round back to that idea of Tsimshon, this space that's created, the space that's made to facilitate creation and creativity. It's a space that light can penetrate, and in which mindful living and awakening can unfold. So this is a Japanese calligraphy for the word ma. And I'm not an expert in this, but I understand this much, that it comprises of two symbols. So I wonder if you can see my mouse, these parts here, these two kind of P shapes that are facing each other, are doors. They represent doors. And down here, you have the symbol for sun. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with these kinds of symbols. And this word ma, I've recently discovered, and I'm quite tickled by, is a concept in Japan that's used in art, in life, and in all sorts of different areas. And it depicts a sort of a loaded space, which I'll say more about in a moment. But what I really love about contemplating the etymology of the symbol is the light, is this sort of the idea of light shining through the doors. And when I think of making space, it's that, you know, there's an opening, that the doors are opening and the light's coming through. And I've read somewhere that sometimes the symbol for the sun here in the middle was substituted by the symbol for the moon. So moonlight streaming in through the windows. So the principle of Ma is something that relates to all aspects of life. It's it can be like a pause in time, an interval, or an emptiness in space. It's the fundamental time and space from which life needs to grow. It's a kind of an interruption or an absence. And both of these, or all of these, allow for new growth, but also for the coming together, maybe not quite the synthesis, but the sort of coexistence of difference. So think about, for example, if you're having a very intense moment for whatever reason and you need to take a pause, you sort of create a moment, you create a space for things to settle or things to come together. You've just received some shocking news, you know, and you need to take 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day. It's that kind of idea. Ma is a free zone that allows for dissimilar things to coexist. And then I think about that principle in music. You know, we think about that, the silence that's inherent in music. Like Anais Nin, I was recently reading a section from her diary much later on in her life, actually, when she was very sick. And she was talking about listening to music. She was listening to a piece of music and it was extremely touching to her. And it was, you know, very much reminding her of her, in loving the music, she was reflecting on her mortality. And she said, the note that was struck and vanished carried away with its sound the things that are precious. It left with its echoes an echo of things that are gone. Between it and the other note that is coming, there is a space that holds a loss and an emptiness. Music holds the movements of life, the chained incidents which compose it, the eternal melting of one note before another to create a song. Beautiful, beautiful picture of impermanence. And then thinking about what Aldous Huxley wrote about beauty and about the notion of pure interval. So again, the space between notes that makes up the composition. And he wrote that God resides in that lovely interval which harmonizes events on all the planes where we discover beauty. And we apprehend that in the alternate voids and fullnesses of a cathedral, in the spaces that separate the salient features of a picture, in the pauses and intervals between the notes of music, in their difference of tone and sonority. And then just the other day, I was walking around the campus at Stanford and I came across a building I'd somehow never seen before. And it was wonderful. It was the Contemplative Center. I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. I'm going to share a picture of that. This is just one view of it. Just incredibly incredible building, minimalist architecture. Which is just space. There's just nothing else there but space, loaded space. You know, it made me think of Canada. It made me think of our Zendo, where we just have space. How much I enjoy looking up and appreciating those high beams that we have at Canada and thinking what that space holds. and this. This is in Vancouver. It's a beautiful tea house that was built like in the middle of the city in Vancouver to carve out a little quiet space. And it's one example of so many kinds of projects. But this little tea house, I thought was delightful in its just complete absence of anything else, but just the demarcation of the space. And then I wanted to finally share this one last image, which I think a lot of you have already seen. I saw this image this week, and it's a painting by May. And it's called Sila, Compassion. And what to me was so striking about this image when I saw it, and the reason I wanted to share it tonight, was the space around it, like how much it informs what is the subject and how the subject kind of is held, you know, in that moment, and how that mood is created, how the background sort of blends with the figures too, and they take on that same kind of mistiness. And then I'm also just looking at a meeting and a moment of connection between two beings. Thank you, May, for letting me share this. And wonderful. So I'm going to end with a quote by Lao Tzu. 30 spokes share the hub of a wheel, yet it is its center that makes it useful. You can mold clay into a vessel, yet it is its emptiness that makes it useful. Cut doors and windows from the walls of a house, but the ultimate use of the house will depend on that part where nothing exists. Therefore, something is shaped into what is, but its usefulness comes from what is not.
It's a very beautiful talk, thank you. I don't have a question yet, maybe later. Thank you.
We need to make space for your question.
That was beautiful, Vanessa. Thank you so much. It was a little bit uncomfortable after you stopped talking, and there was that silence, that space. And sometimes we feel like we have to fill up the spaces, and then we can't really appreciate what's there. Sorry, I'm a little bit hoarse. Particularly in conversation, I notice sometimes if a conversation is not moving along, and as soon as one person stops talking and then the other person starts talking, it's uncomfortable to allow a quiet time after someone has said something where we can just take in what has been said and quietly respond, instead of filling up the space with meaningless words and just noise. And I loved what you said about music and about Anais Nin's description of listening to music, because if there weren't the spaces, we couldn't have music if there weren't the spaces between the notes. And I just love all the images that you shared with us, both in the readings and in the photos and in the images. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you. It just gave me the thought of the importance of in cultivating the ability to be silent with one another, you know, almost like it's a gift. If we can, if someone will allow me to be silent in their presence, it feels like a gift. And it reminds me of reading this book by Pico Iyer, who I think was quite good friend, and he'd go and visit him. And he said that you'd go and visit him and you would just sit in his garden and not say anything. Like they would just sit in silence in the garden. And I thought, imagine doing that and feeling comfortable. Wouldn't that just be wonderful?
Yes.
So thank you.
During your entire beautiful talk, I was thinking about this quotation from Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And I'm sure many of you have heard this quote, but it goes, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. Mm.
Hmm. Thank you, Lucy. Hi, Philip.
I kind of like Brenda felt the talk was complete and it reminded me of the of the kind of stories when the teacher comes up to talk and the bell rings to end the talk. it was a real gift. You're sharing those perspectives on space, and I thought it was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Uma.
Hi, Vanessa. Thank you for the talk. Just reminded me of something that I was thinking of, this word, this phrase that came in my head, that we are analog beings living in a digital world. And it's all ones and zeros. And I was talking to a friend one day and I said to him, he was having problems with recording sound and recording music. And he said, it just has no, wavelength to it. It's all ones and zeros. So I said to him, why don't you introduce some noise? And he looked at me strange as, what are you saying? I said, just introduce fake noise. And he said, that's actually an interesting idea. I wouldn't have, you know, thought of it that way. But, you know, just your talk also reminded me of, and the reason why I'm saying this is that your talk also reminded me of putting the needle on the record and listening to the music, listening to jazz or listening to blues, and listening to everything that has happened that has been recorded, the crackling that comes in with the records, the old time recordings where you can hear things in the background which weren't supposed to be there. And all that stuff is just alive and full. And, you know, with digital, it's all ones and zeros. There's no space in between. And so it's really interesting that this is, I think, it's also has to do with our practice, that this is our practice. It's something that is traditional, it's old, it has a certain grounding and a certain very strong foundation that lets us move around in the world without really, you know, getting too attached to it. And that's the best way to put it. And that's what I kept on thinking with your thought, that with your whole lecture, was that, you know, it's you know, silences and spaces have to do with our practice, and it also has to do with tradition. It's about slowing down and letting things happen, giving things space, and having a certain equanimity towards what is happening. I think that's what came to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Uma. Yeah. There's a certain speed. There's a certain I'm deeply indebted to the quality of space that this practice has brought into my life. I think that's the way to put it. It's a treasure. Dan.
As you were concluding your remarks, I was thinking, what about Lao Tzu? What about Lao Tzu? And then you said, it was such a wonderful rhyme, because my favorite quote of his is, adapt the emptiness therein and you will have the use of the vessel.
Mm.
If I had anything that was, should be tacked on my forehead, it would be that saying. The other comment is, I can't believe you've been with us only 5 years. You really seem to be with us for at least thrice that amount of time. And that says a lot about the magnanimity of your presence, that you seem to have been with us much longer than in reality you really have. So here was my spontaneous response to your talk. I'm a financial advisor, and today was a nasty day in the market. One of my investments went down 10% in a day. And I got clients calling me and fretful, and I had to tell them that this mutual fund paid out a dividend and a capital gain of 10%. Actually, you just got more shares. Nothing had happened. But in the excitement and perturbation and fretfulness of the panicky response of losing money, the emptiness therein could not be seen. Actually, nothing had happened. Nothing had occurred. But the appearance of something terrifying had occurred. And I occasionally look at the thousands of hours I've spent in Zazen practice and wonder, what the hell am I doing? Why would any human being, any sane human being, spend tens of thousands of hours in this kind of practice? And the only answer I can come up with is to unhypnotize myself from thought. Because in our daily life, when things come up, it's almost always a fearful, panicky response that something's there, something must be there. I'm in contention over something. When actually, I ought to just adapt the emptiness therein and have the use of the vessel, because nothing's there. And that lesson of detoxifying myself from this sense that there's got to be there. I'm anxious, I'm worried, I'm fretful, I'm concerned. That habitual rhythm of our lives and of my life is being unlearned in Zazen practice. And that's what I've come up with after thousands of hours of sitting. And it was wonderful to have your talk ignite that impression.
I'm glad. Thank you, Dan. Yeah. I would say for me, I mean, it just takes me back to, and I don't know how well I'm sort of expressing it, but we relate to those thoughts. We relate to all those things that come up. And I think that I just never understand that so well as I do through practice. It's just when that background becomes apparent and you realize that there is the option to put yourself there in that emptiness, you know, in the truth of that, rather than in the drama of the foreground. It's a different kind of experience. I'm glad it resonated with you. Yeah, I'm happy that your clients didn't have such a bad day after all. Les?
Well, as usual, you presented us with a very a carefully considered set of reflections that I think brought a lot of peace to this evening. You know, in the last, in this past generation, human beings have been enabled to leave, to go into space, to leave the Earth. And by so doing, and by looking back and taking photos and having the rest of us see these photos, we've all been overwhelmed and amazed by how beautiful the Earth looks from out there. When given space between us and the Earth, we see how beautiful it is. But up until now, throughout history, we've never been able to leave the Earth. We've never been able to put space between ourselves and where we live. And when we can do that, when we can put space between ourselves and our life and the life that's all around us, then we have an opportunity to see its beauty. And we're amazed by it, we're overwhelmed by it. And we're so glad to be in that silent place called space and observe the beauty of our world. And it leads me to think of the moon and how Zazen, our Zazen is a way of allowing our mind to be like the moon. In silence, observing, and reflecting light. And that's all. And how lucky the moon must feel to observe the beauty of Earth and the beauty of heavens as viewed through the world of space. And I think that's what our Zazen does for us. It allows us to be an uncritical, unthinking, unworried observer, just like the moon, with space to see the beauty of everything we live in, everything that exists, and including where we live. So we become like the heavens when we sit, like the moon and all the other beings in the universe. Space between everything observing everything in silence, reflecting the light and seeing things as they are, thanks to the space that's been given between them. And that's what I think our Zazen is. We should be like the moon. Thank you.
Thank you, Les. Giuseppe.
Hey, Vanessa. Thanks for your talk. Can you hear me?
Yes.
How about the hesitation of coming out of stillness that you quoted in that sentence? How can we avoid that the stillness become become limited by activity, you know, that we have always to return to. What are your thoughts there? And you said a couple of times you're very busy, and so activity is a large part of life. what's your thought there?
And I just want to make sure I understood you correctly. You said also how would you avoid stillness becoming limited by activity? You mean like short, like cut off or compromised by activity?
Yes, or like yes, or a little bit this, your feeling of this almost perceived duality and this hesitation that the master was warning us about. And yes, how is activity, how is stillness when seen from inside activity? Mm. Because we are also activity.
Mm-hmm. So I what really resonated with me in that quote from the Zazen Nyojinki was the idea of was the placement of the koan in that moment. You know, I think that this threshold, true or not, you know, illusory or not, but this threshold between silence and between stillness and activity, crossing it is a koan. You know, crossing it is the skill. It going from one to the other and understanding the relationship of one to the other. There's no stillness without busyness, and there's no busyness without stillness. I appreciate my human activity. I often appreciate being busy. You know, I think you can, but I think there is such a thing also as stillness within busyness. So I think you can be busy and still at the same time. I think that stillness can sustain. I think the clarity can sustain. Because activity is activity. Activity. And then there's mental activity that complicates, makes things cloudy. Go on.
Yeah, and we can only help people with activity.
May.
This question exactly struck me. This is the boundary between duality and the non-duality. You know, so okay, I just have a ballet class today. I come spinning. So I guess when you're spinning fast, but the center does not move.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, a lot of, you know, Zazen, in order to emphasize Zazen, we have to create a duality, which is, oh, Zazen is so good because this, this, this. And then the moment we make that statement, we fall into the trap of language, which is duality, right? And then, but now the challenge is that Zen is only on the cushion practice, on the cushion. So off the cushion, which is 24/7. So that's the off the cushion practice, which is harder, you know, almost like you got a PhD, but you still have to go to life. You know, life is hard. Not swimming pool. I just feel like Zazen is swimming pool. So, you know, I'm practicing my skills, but gosh, I'm in the ocean, you know. So so that was water and the ocean thing. I guess there's no separation. You know, the moment, you know, last you talk about Mu, that moment I just feel like each of us is a star in the sky. And there's no difference. And there's no difference between Mu and the star. There's no difference between Earth and Mu, and everything collapse into one. I don't know, that was just very short. Very just like, you know, I can't grasp. I just want to express myself. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, May. Thank you. And thank you. Thank you for allowing me to use your painting.
I don't exist. Come on. That's not me.
And I appreciate that. Dave.
Thank you so much for your talk, Vanessa. What May just said, and also what you said about in the middle of your talk about just getting up from Zazen and going to the next thing, and this whole question of the non-duality of Zazen and everyday life reminds me of a wonderful exchange I had many years ago with Les, where I was talking about my home practice and just some little sort of closing ritual I had found myself doing at the end of my practice. So I didn't just jump up from my practice and go on about my daily life. And the way I characterized it was, I was trying to sort of smooth the rough edges of the practice so that I didn't just jump up and leave the edge of my Zazen ragged while I ran off to do the next practical thing. And I'm not sure quite what I was expecting, but Les kept asking me about those edges. Edges that I was trying to smooth out. And I really left Dokusan feeling rather confused. And as I was walking back to the Zendo, it suddenly hit me like a lightning bolt. True practice has no edges. I've carried that with me ever since. So thank you for that, Les.
Teresa.
Vanessa, thank you for your talk. I'm not sure I have a question, but I really appreciated the talk and the pictures you share of the shoreline and everything, how evocative they are. I don't know, maybe I was thinking while you were sharing about the role of art on creating a space for the viewer, and how people who don't have a practice, how can they, you know, have their sense of a space expanded. Mm. Thank you.
I hope that seeing those pictures of shoreline brought you back here a little bit, Teresa. the most vibrant thing about that place for me is the smell of the fennel. I can never get over it, like how the wild fennel that grows there, how strong it is. I'll never forget that smell.
Thank you. I was just rereading that beautiful quote I saw it this morning at the bottom of the newsletter, and I didn't realize that you'd put it there, but just in rereading it, struck at the absence of some of the issues between stillness and activity that somehow comes out of that quote. It's not like it's not like he's addressing it conceptually, but just that expression seems to say, what's the problem? it's so spontaneous and beautiful. Thanks for the quote and the beautiful lecture.
I'm glad you noticed it on the newsletter too. That you scroll that far down, that's good to know.
Brenda? All right, here's a question, one more. I love that quote that you said, takes a free zone that allows dissimilar things to exist as the concept of ma. So kind of going back to what Giuseppe was saying, it sounds as if there's almost like three things, because you have the free space and then you have the silence and the activity. But the space is kind of almost behind the silence and the activity. Is that what we're talking about here, or how do you see it?
It makes me think of conflict, you know, of when that quote talks about holding difference, and holding things that would be at odds with each other. And I think of a space in which conflicting things can exist, but without causing harm. Mm-hmm. And how big does that space need to be? And I would call that space love. Mm. It's something that's boundless and unconditional and can hold everything. The same way that, I don't know, a mother can hold two fighting children, you know.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.